Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Next week, the House Judiciary Committee will hear the case for impeaching President Donald Trump. Democrats are preparing three potential articles of impeachment, accusing the president of abuse of power, obstruction of Congress, and obstruction of justice.
The impeachment question centers around American military aid to Ukraine and President Trump's efforts to have Ukraine investigate former Vice President Biden and his son. Trump also allegedly tried to revive a debunked theory that the Ukrainian government had conspired with Democrats to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. Now, the House Judiciary Committee is the next step in this process that could have the full U.S. House of Representatives vote on impeachment before the end of the year. Five members of the Judiciary Committee are from Florida, and two of them, a Republican and a Democrat, will join us throughout this hour. So what do you think about the actions of President Trump? Are they high crimes and misdemeanors as required by the Constitution? What do you think about the impeachment process and how it has played out so far? You can join our conversation statewide, 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800, or you can find us on Twitter at Florida Roundup.
Now, later in the hour, we'll hear from Democrat Val Demings of Orlando. But first, we're pleased to welcome to the show U.S. Representative Greg Stube, Republican from Florida's 17th District in Sarasota. Congressman Stube, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Now, you've called this impeachment process a partisan attack by Democrats. Last night, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said this is not about partisanship, but rather, in her view, upholding the rule of law and the Constitution. What do you say to the voters out there who believe it's important to hold President Trump accountable for his actions with Ukraine?
Well, I would say, how is this not a partisan exercise? The only thing that's been bipartisan about this has been the vote not to move forward with impeachment. There's not a single Republican that has been supporting this. There's quotes from Speaker Pelosi and other leaders in the Democratic Party that if the evidence is not compelling and overwhelming and bipartisan and people from the opposite party are not willing to support the impeachment proceeding, and that's their quotes, not mine, we shouldn't move forward with impeachment and divide the country. And that's exactly what they're deciding to do.
Representative Stube, it's Tom Hudson. Thanks for joining us again. Has the president, in your opinion, committed any high crimes or misdemeanors?
No. If you look at what the Democrats are saying is something that is an impeachable offense, it wouldn't qualify as an impeachable offense. I don't think there's anything in the transcript of that phone call. And their own witnesses that were called in the open public hearings in the Intelligence Committee even stated that that was a true and accurate reflection of the conversation between the Ukrainian president and President Trump. So if we know that that's an accurate representation and it's public for all Americans to read for themselves, please point to me, and I have asked Democrats in open hearings to please point to me where in that transcript and call is a crime that was being committed or a high crime and misdemeanors. Other Republicans in the hearing have asked direct witnesses in the intelligence public hearings, do you have any direct evidence that the president has committed an impeachable offense? And nobody spoke up. Nobody has offered any resolution to that.
Well, Congressman, what about the initial findings of the whistleblower who has not yet identified him or herself, first alerting Congress that the president was attempting to blackmail Ukraine into helping him politically? Other witnesses have come forward since then and fully confirmed that initial report, made the case that the president essentially tried to solicit a bribe and invited foreign election interference in violation of U.S. law. Congressional testimony the other day from constitutional law experts said, if that isn't an impeachable offense, we don't know what is. What's your response to that?
My response is that's an opinion. There's nothing that is a bribery. And in fact, if you go back to that public hearing where we had Mr. Turley talk about the bribery issue, the way that Mr. Schiff has been trying to characterize the bribery issue, he stated, and he's a Democrat who didn't support the president, who's also a law professor, that it's not bribery as it's laid out in the Constitution, and that there hasn't been any evidence to support an impeachable offense. So what you had in the last judiciary hearing is four Democratic law professors, three of which brought by the Democrats and one was a Republican witness, giving their opinions to the American people. They weren't fact witnesses. In fact, Congressman Gates, who's also from Florida, asked all of them, do any of you have any direct evidence as it relates to the president and these issues? And nobody raised their hand. So you have a bunch of law professors giving their opinion. I like to focus on the facts and focus on the evidence.
So
you read that transcript. There's nothing in that transcript that says that there was a quid pro quo.
The do us a favor language doesn't meet that definition in your estimation?
No, there's no, even President Zelensky said there was no pressure to do an investigation. And in fact, they didn't even know that the aid was being held up and the aid was released.
But the lack of knowledge of a potential crime doesn't mean there is no potential crime, Representative. You know that certainly is.
Right. No crime.
Fair enough. In your opinion. Let me ask you this, though. You're sitting in the Judiciary Committee. Next week, you will get the official report that was written and published this week from the House Intelligence Committee based upon its hearings, both that happened in private as well as the public hearings. There have been witnesses from the White House that were called to testify before the House Intelligence Committee. White House representatives have not chose not to appear in front of that committee. For instance, the chief of staff of President Trump, Nick Mulvaney, and John Bolton, the former national security advisor. As a member of the Judiciary Committee, as you're looking at evidence, would you support subpoenaing those members of the White House staff to appear before the Judiciary Committee in an impeachment inquiry?
I would support subpoenaing the Republican witnesses that we have requested on multiple different occasions to come before us and testify.
How about the chief of staff?
Why not Mulvaney and Bolton? Because Republicans in the House have consistently said more fact witnesses should be called. Yet the White House has not allowed those fact witnesses to appear, which is why the president is now facing an impeachment charge of obstruction of Congress. Blocked testimony from key White House officials.
You have three different branches of government in our government system, each with constitutional rights and responsibilities. And if the House, and if you listen to Mr. Turley, he said this in the hearing in Judiciary this week, the executive branch has constitutional rights and privileges. And if they are exerting executive privilege and they don't want certain people to testify, and the Democrats don't want to bring them in, then subpoena those witnesses, which they haven't subpoenaed John Bolton, by the way, and take it to court and let the third branch of government that's interpreting the law, let them decide. Now, if after the Democrats have subpoenaed John Bolton, then that case goes before the United States Supreme Court, and the United States Supreme Court then says that John Bolton is required to testify, then if the White House tells him not to appear, then they are obstructing the investigation. Claiming rights and privileges under the Constitution.
The White House, though, has been accused of unprecedented obstruction. They've blocked dozens of requests for documents, blocked a slew of officials from testifying. Let me quote Fox News Judge Andrew Napolitano. He said he would vote to impeach this president on one charge in particular, obstruction of Congress, by refusing to comply with a slew of lawfully issued subpoenas for testimony or documents. That, under our law and traditions, is an impeachable offense.
It is not. I disagree wholeheartedly.
It is. And it's what ended with the impeachment of Andrew Johnson, Richard Nixon, and Bill Clinton. They were all, this came up over and over again. This has come up many times.
Richard Nixon, after the U.S. Supreme Court told the president in the White House in the Nixon impeachment to comply, then he did not comply. That has not happened in this incident. If they want to subpoena witnesses and the executive branch, the co-equal branch of our government, exerts executive privilege, and you take it to the third branch of our government, the judiciary, let that go through the process. But the Democrats are unwilling to do that because they don't want to wait. They want to get this done before Christmas so they can go about their holiday.
But if there's nothing to hide, why not turn over the documents? Why not let everyone testify if the president has done nothing wrong?
Why I could use the same argument for the Democrats. Why isn't Chairman Schiff coming and presenting and testifying before the committee on Monday instead of his staff? Why have they not given us all of the underlying evidence that the Intelligence Committee has developed over the last 2 months?
So, Representative Stubbe, as a member of the Judiciary Committee, you know, you obviously have a voice there. Will you move to subpoena those individuals, including Chairman Schiff?
That's what I'm trying to explain to you. We do not have subpoena power. We are in the minority. We have six letters that we've requested all this information. And if you go back to my testimony, my 5 minutes of the last hearing this week in Judiciary, I asked the chairman directly, Mr. Chairman, when are we getting a minority hearing? When are we getting a minority hearing that happened in Clinton impeachment, that happened in the Nixon impeachment? He refused to answer my question. As we sit here today and talk on this phone, It's the same thing. We are not getting a minority hearing. We aren't getting the underlying evidence.
Representative, we are being able to ask
our witnesses to come and testify. The president hasn't been given the opportunity for his counsel to cross-examine all of the witnesses that were in these secret hearings. Those are all rights that were afforded to both Nixon and to Clinton in previous impeachments as not being afforded to this president.
We've got Floridians who'd like to chime in here, Representative. Stand by here. Stay on the line with us, talking with Representative Greg Stube, a Republican from Sarasota, member of the House Judiciary Committee. He's with us here on the Florida Roundup on Florida Public Radio, 305-995-1800, as we talk about the impeachment inquiry into President Donald Trump. Alice in Tampa has been patient. Go ahead, Alice. You're on the radio.
I think my issue with the whole thing has been, I hate to say it, I'm not certain that Trump has done all of the right things, but the fact is that presidents, any sitting president is probably allowed to do things that you or I are that are illegal for the normal person. The issue I have is that since he was elected, people have been talking about impeachment. From the moment he was elected, people have been talking about impeachment. I think an impeachable offense is anything that the people of the country have, you know, stood up and said, okay, this is wrong. You've gone too far. And the fact is you only have one side of the country saying that right now. If it really was impeachable, we would all be up in arms. You would have a majority of people standing up and saying it's wrong. You would have been able to change hearts and minds. But I think the problem is, and I'll just say this, you know, to that vocal minority, they've been trying to unelect him since he was elected. The whole Not My President movement, the Never Trumpers movement, I think they did themselves a disservice because if there is an offense here, most of us can't hear it because we've been hearing impeachment since he got there. That's my whole point. I think that the whole process has been corrupted, and yes, it's extremely partisan. I think Congress should be acting separate from the executive, and they should make up their own minds. And clear to me right now, they haven't made up any minds here. You've only got the same people who didn't want him before saying impeachment, and you know, you got the other side saying, I don't see enough here.
Got it. Alice, thanks for adding your voice to it from Tampa. We appreciate that. Representative Stube, let me ask you about something kind of embedded in what Alice is discussing there. Is it appropriate to hold an impeachment trial at any moment during a presidential election year, in your estimation?
Well, I would like to respond to what Alice said, because I think she hit on a very important point.
Well,
from the day I was sworn into Congress, January 3rd of this year, on that very day, a Democrat in my class called for the impeachment of this president. And first it was the Russia collusion hoax, and we spent 22 months of taxpayer dollars investigating that. Robert Mueller came before the Judiciary Committee. I asked him questions, and he sat there unequivocally and stated there was no evidence that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia. So that didn't work out for the Democrats. So that moved then to obstruction of justice. That fizzled. Then it moved to corruption. Oh, we don't want members of our government staying in Trump hotels. And then all of a sudden, this whistleblower, who we know now conspired with and worked with and met with Chairman Schiff's staff before he filed the complaint, the whistleblower complaint, then now suddenly we're going to impeach the president over a phone call. So you're right, Alice. For the last year that the Democrats have been in charge of Congress, they have been trying to find any and everything that they can impeach this president on. And they've tried four different things, and this is the thing that they finally decided that they're going to move for.
Representative Stube, that is not unprecedented, right? We've seen when a different political party has the hold of the House of Representatives compared to the White House for there to be pretty consistent inquiries or investigations into presidential behavior or behavior by a president prior to them coming into power. So those types of things have happened before. But I'm still curious.
Last time it happened was 1998 with Bill Clinton. Before that, it was Nixon.
Let me just point out that the caller said, let me just try to get the representative's answer to my initial question, which is it appropriate to hold an impeachment trial for any president during a presidential election year?
Well, I believe that Congress holds, just like the professor said, Congress holds the right to impeachment. So if Congress decides that there is an impeachable offense under the Constitution, and I'm speaking purely legally and from the Constitution, then yes, at any point in time that Congress feels that there is an impeachable offense and they want to move forward with an impeachment proceeding, Congress has the authority to do that. What I've been saying all along is if you're going to do it the way it's been done in the history of our country and give the president the opportunity to call witnesses on behalf. Give the president the opportunity to have his lawyer cross-examine witnesses. Give the minority the opportunity to call witnesses and have minority hearings. All rights that were established and given to both the minority in the Nixon impeachment and the minority in the Clinton impeachment. And that is not happening now, and it's still not happening as we sit here today.
Congressman, let me ask you about the caller's point a minute ago. She said that the country is divided, and it certainly is. A slight majority of Americans support impeachment, about 47% to 44% who don't support it. And this speaks to the polarization in this country and the political divisions that we see in this country. And certainly the constituents in your district, the majority of them do not support impeachment in Southwest Florida. That said, what about the slight majority of Americans who are deeply concerned about the actions of this president? And even though the timing is bad and you've raised legitimate questions about the process that the majority is conducting, they're concerned about violations of our rule of law and inviting foreign interference in our electoral process. Aren't those legitimate concerns?
Well, I don't agree that that phone call illustrates our president asking for foreign interference. So that is a preface. To answer your question, if the American people are not happy with the behavior of the president, then they're going to have the opportunity to vote for the president in less than a year. And 10 months, 11 months from now, the American people are going to have the opportunity to vote for whoever they want to vote for to be president. So if they're not happy with his behavior in any way, shape, or form, let the electorate decide who they want to represent them as president of the United States in November of next year.
Let's go to Rennell in Hudson. He's on the line. You're on the air, Rennell. Go ahead.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I have a question for Representative Stube. I'm an independent veteran, and I've voted in every election since I turned 18. My question to you, sir, is, why is it that you don't believe that the voters like myself are actually paying attention to what is obviously rhetoric on the president's behavior, but much worse, how you guys are not standing for the rule of law? I have a copy of the Constitution. I downloaded all 448 pages of the Mueller report. Everything that comes out, I want to know the concrete truth on it. So myself, like thousands of others, we dig into this material to find the truth. And you, sir, are being disingenuous at best. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us as we continue our conversation with members of the House Judiciary Committee based here in Florida as the impeachment process moves forward in Washington. Thanks for continuing on with us. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. Had some technical difficulties there in our final moments there with a caller from Hudson, Representative Greg Stube, Republican member of the House Judiciary Committee, who represents parts of Southwest Florida, including Sarasota, is still with us. Representative Stube, I apologize for the technical difficulties there, but did you want to respond at all to what we heard from the caller in Hudson regarding some of the constitutional arguments that that you've been making?
Well, I'm glad that he's reading the Mueller report, and the finding in the Mueller report was that the Trump campaign didn't conspire with the Russian government, despite the fact that those were the allegations and that was the investigation. That our country spent 22 months and $30 million and 500 search warrants and 500 subpoenas and 18 lawyers to investigate something that originated from a dossier that was promulgated by the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign, which we should find out on Monday morning.
That dossier was initially commissioned by the conservative Free Beacon, a Washington newspaper, before it made its way to, it's said, a Republican candidate, and then the Clinton campaign. The Mueller report also stated that it was the evidence showed that the president attempted to obstruct justice, didn't it?
No, it didn't, and it didn't.
I believe it did.
Absolutely did not. It did not give any type of charging instruction, and the Attorney General A.G. Barr and Rod Rosenstein, who worked for Barack Obama for 8 years in the DOJ, opined, even considering that the president couldn't be charged, that there wasn't an obstruction of justice charge, that there wasn't any evidence to support that.
It said that there was evidence to support obstruction of justice, Congressman, just not enough to move forward with charges.
Okay, well,
that obstruction of justice could still occur regardless of whether a person committed an underlying crime. I'm quoting from the report.
Okay, that same report, Rod Rosenstein and the Attorney General of the United States decided, despite the fact that the president couldn't be charged, that based on the underlying evidence, there wasn't enough to charge the president for obstruction. So we have no collusion with the Trump campaign, despite that being the narrative of the left in the mainstream media for 3 years, Robert Mueller testifying to that fact, and then we have no charge for obstruction of justice. And then, because that didn't work out for the Democrats, we moved on to something else.
The Representative Stubbe, as you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, you do not think that the president has committed any high crime or misdemeanor or anything rising to the level of impeachment. With that in mind, as you are sitting as a member of the Judiciary Committee on Monday, listening to the presentation of the Democrat and the Republican of the House Intelligence Committee, what's the purpose, if you've already made up your mind?
You'd have to ask the Democrats that. We've been asking for evidence and fact witnesses to be brought in. We in the minority don't have any control over the proceedings whatsoever. We don't have any influence as to what the chairman wants to have in the committee. We have asked repeatedly to have fact witnesses and to have testimony and evidence before the Judiciary Committee. We have been denied. We've asked repeatedly for minority hearings. We've been denied. We don't have any control over the direction of the Judiciary.
Will you attend the hearing on Monday?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I'll be there. And I'll ask questions of the Democratic staff and ask questions. Unfortunately, Chairman Schiff, for whatever reason, doesn't think that he should come and testify before the committee on the report that his committee put together. But yes, absolutely, I'll be there.
Representative Stubbe, thank you for your time. Well, we appreciate the comments, and certainly we will be watching and listening on Monday and as the proceeding continues. Greg Stubbe, representative of Sarasota, Republican, member of the House Judiciary Committee.
And we want your calls on the Florida Roundup. It's 305-995-1800. Right now, we're pleased to welcome House member Val Demings, Democrat of Orlando. She sits on both the House Intelligence and Judiciary Committees. Representative Demings, thanks for being with us.
It's great to be with you.
I'd like to get you to respond to your colleague Greg Stubbe's comments in the first half of the show. He says Democrats in the House are rushing to impeachment simply due to partisanship and dislike of this president, that they've settled on Ukraine because they were unable to impeach President Trump over the findings in the Mueller report and the investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election. What's your response to that?
Well, let me say this. I know the Republicans have struggled for a while now to try to defend the indefensible. I do believe the president could help them out by not obstructing witnesses from coming before the committee. But nevertheless, you know, as a member of the Intelligence Committee, I have been involved in the depositions of foreign service officers that have served in Republican and Democratic administrations. These individuals have absolutely no political, you know, will to get involved in the politics of the day. They came forward because they care about this country, and they were concerned about the president using his power to coerce a foreign power for political purposes. And you know, we've done the work of the Intelligence Committee. Now we're on to Judiciary. I believe, in spite of what my Republican colleagues are saying, the evidence against the president is overwhelming, and we're going to move forward, as you well know, in drafting articles of impeachment.
Representative Demings, it's Tom Hudson. What will those articles accuse President Trump of specifically?
Well, we're going to be working through the weekend, and we'll be involved in discussions and deliberations about what those articles will exactly look like. But I believe, and this is Val Demings from Florida talking, that the evidence has been pretty overwhelming. It's clear and convincing that the president abused his power, that he obstructed Congress, that he obstructed justice, and we'll see what else. I believe he jeopardized our national security, because this is a national security issue. Ukraine is a strategic partner to the United States, and they are actively involved in a war against Russian aggression. When Ukraine fights against Russian aggression, they are fighting on behalf of America. It's America's fight against Russian aggressors. So for the president to use the sacred trust of his office for personal political gain is just a disgrace. And I really hope that my Republican colleagues who serve on both committees, that my Republican colleagues who serve on the House will, at the end of the day, do the right thing. The decisions that we are making now, as you all know, have the potential to live well beyond us and set the stage for future behavior. We can either hold the president accountable, this president, or we can send a message that, yes, the president, Republican or Democrat, is above the law, and that is not a message that I am going to send.
It's 305-995-1800 to join us. Congresswoman Demings, what about the GW University Law School professor the Republicans had testify the other day? He said that an extended impeachment investigation could eventually build a stronger case, but he criticized your party for not using the courts and the full extent of the law to force more testimony and more document production before drafting articles.
Robert Mueller said during his testimony before the Judiciary Committee now several months ago, and he said it so clearly and so plainly, and I hope everybody's listening. He said, as we speak, right this very minute, Russia is trying to interfere in our election. Right now, this very minute. Remember, this is about protecting the integrity of the 2020 election. We have reports today that Rudy Giuliani is in Ukraine. I wonder what he's doing there. The 2020 election is at stake, and I do believe that Americans should decide American elections, not any other foreign power. The framers of the Constitution were so extremely concerned about a president abusing his power, because this is the framers talking, and allow a foreign power to influence our election. We have a direct responsibility. The sense of urgency is now.
Representative Demings,
to protect our 2020 election against foreign interference. And let me say this. We've given the president and his counsel an opportunity to participate. We've asked for subpoenaed documents from the State Department and others who might, that the president has prevented from speaking. We believe that if they submit those documents, it really shows a good faith effort that they are serious.
Representative Demings, will you allow your Democratic colleagues on the Judiciary Committee to call witnesses? I'm sorry, your Republican colleagues on the committee to call witnesses.
That's not my decision. That's a leadership
decision. But would you support that? Would you talk to the leadership about supporting that?
Let me say this. We're not going on a, I'll use one of the president's phrases, a witch hunt, right? We're not, I served as a law enforcement officer, and we just didn't call witnesses because somebody was trying to delay a process or just trying to cloud the waters or turn it into a circus. We call witnesses who, number one, had direct knowledge. They had something to add. They had shown a good faith effort to want to participate. So, look, leadership will, I'm sure, review the Republicans' request. But let me circle back around as I end this call and go back to the floor to vote. This is serious business. This is bigger than Republicans and Democrats, and we can play games with this if we want to. But our children and our grandchildren and the future of our democracy is at stake, and doggone it, I care about that.
Representative Demings, thank you for your time. Representative Val Demings, Democrat from the state of Florida here on the House Judiciary Committee. Melissa, we should point out that we did invite Representative Stuby and Representative Demings to appear for an equal amount of time. Representative Demings could not join us for the same amount of time as Representative Stuby did during our program.
It's good, though, to get... insight into this process from both a Republican and a Democrat here in Florida who serve on these vital committees. You know, as we follow along from down here in Florida, as the impeachment process moves forward. Let's go to some calls now here on the Florida Roundup. Eric is in Tampa. Hi, Eric. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much for letting me on. I just wanted to point out that the U.S. Constitution, Article 2, Section 3, says that the president shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed. It is therefore a primary cardinal duty of the president to investigate suspected crime. Joe Biden was suspected of the crime of corruption, and it was his duty to investigate it. And there's a mutual aid treaty between Ukraine and the United States for investigating crime.
Mm-hmm.
And it was perfectly within his purview, President Trump's purview, to ask President Zelensky to help him, or rather, will do him a favor.
I hear you, Eric, but what about the testimony of the ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland? He testified that the president of Ukraine was told no investigation was necessary. He simply needed to make a public statement that they would investigate the Bidens so as to theoretically damage Joe Biden heading into an election year as the president's potentially his opponent in the general election.
I don't see that that's a substantive complaint.
Why not?
If you're going to announce an investigation, of course you're going to carry out an investigation.
But according to Mr. Sondland, there was no investigation that was being called for. They were simply told to give the appearance of conducting an investigation.
All this, impeachment rubbish. The whole process has been interrupted by the impeachment.
The process of the investigation? Eric, we got a lot of more calls here tell us their opinion as well. Let's remind folks that you are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Dania Beach, Jackie on line two. Go ahead, Jackie. You're on the radio. Your thoughts.
Hi. Okay, I have so many, but I have to stay focused here. It's like I'm shaking with, like, oh my gosh, what's happening to our country? My first president, first memory, I was in kindergarten in Virginia, Catholic school, when President Kennedy was shot. My first president I voted for was Carter. He's still one of my favorite guys. And now we have this guy. One of the major problems here is people are not educated. We no longer teach civics in school. And so that one person that called in to Alice, speaking, one of the first callers I heard, speaking with Rep. Stubbe, and her comment that, well, maybe we, she didn't say citizens, but we, and I'm assuming she meant citizens, would be breaking the law. But the president, pretty much, she didn't say he's above the law, but that's what her inference was. That was my take on what she was saying. And that is so far from our Constitution. We the people are supposed to be running the government. That no longer is the case.
Yeah, Jackie, we got some tweets to that effect as well from Alice's perspective about just that, about how it's not up to the president to decide what is an impeachable offense or not.
Sure, that's why we have separation of powers. You know?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Like, what is happening? People are not educated. And that's a huge problem. It's great for the 1%. Great for corporations, but the middle class is shrinking. It's like disappearing in my lifetime. The oceans are it's like, what is happening? I've got grandkids and I cry, and I'm not a bleeding heart, I can assure you. I'm pretty tough.
Jackie, thanks for the call. I appreciate you sharing your opinion.
Let's get one more call in before the break. It's Lee in Polk County. Hi, Lee. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for having us speak. I'm here in Polk County, and we want to know impeachable offenses. One of the issues was the emoluments. Many of us feel that President Trump has been trying to make money off of his office for government for his own pocket. We have heard that the Mar-a-Lago Resort here in Florida will be used for a huge an international conference, and so he's making money off of his position, and to me that's corrupt. And also President Trump, we have him on tape, before he was elected, he said he could kill somebody on the street and he would not be indicted because he's above the law. And we heard that before he was elected. We have seen him harass the ambassador to the Ukraine. He harassed her with his tweets. The man does not seem to have honorable sense, and he's corrupt. And I don't understand why all these right-wing Christian groups out there support a president who talked about grabbing women by their private parts. I just don't understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee. Thank you for the call. Okay, lots of points made there from Lee. It's interesting, Tom, whether you agree or disagree with the Democratic strategy, they're not focusing on all those other controversies with this impeachment matter, violations of the Emoluments Clause, for example, as she pointed out. They're sticking to this matter of Ukraine. And so we've gotten a really good sampling of opinion from callers across Florida. As we discuss this very hot topic and lots of tweets, too, you can always tweet us at Florida Roundup. It was great to have both Greg Stube and Val Demings on the show as well. We're going to shift gears, though, in just a moment as we speak with the outgoing president of Florida's First Amendment Foundation. Open government in Florida. That's next.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks, as always, for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, here's a question for you, Florida. Do you want to be able to find out where your state lawmaker lives, your representative in Tallahassee? A proposed bill would make the home addresses and phone numbers of state legislators, the governor, and the cabinet exempt from the state's broad sunshine laws.
Yeah, Florida has some of the strongest sunshine laws in the nation, allowing residents access to all kinds of government documents and communications. Journalists, advocates, just about anybody can request information covered by these laws and compel state and local governments and agencies to hand over the information.
Still, though, efforts to shrink what's covered by the sunshine law here in Florida are pretty common. And there's this new bill filed by Republican State Senator Kelly Stargell of Lakeland. It aims to keep addresses of state lawmakers secret. She says it's a security issue. Since 2014, lawmakers have been required to live in the district they're elected to represent. Now, as this plays out, at the same time, the First Amendment Foundation in Florida is undergoing a changing of the guard. After 25 years at the helm, President Barbara Peterson is retiring. New President Pamela Marsh takes over next year. This foundation is closely watching state lawmakers as they prepare to meet in session next month.
As it always does, right, Melissa? Dozens of bills get tracked, these bills that could limit the public's right to know what government is doing on their behalf. The outgoing First Amendment Foundation President Barbara Peterson back with us on the Florida Roundup from our sister station in Tampa, WUSF. Barbara, welcome back to the program. Nice to hear from you again. And congratulations on 25 years, by the way.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
No small feat, WFSU, pardon me, in Tallahassee, not in Tampa, in Tallahassee, Barbara. Let's talk about this specific legislation here. Should the home addresses and phone numbers of state lawmakers be exempt from sunshine laws?
I don't believe they should, no. It's not just a question of us being able to verify that our legislators are living in the districts which they represent. There's also a question, for example, about conflicts of interest. If we don't have information about a legislator's spouse or children, for example, then how do we know that there isn't some conflict there that we need to know in order to hold our legislators accountable? The other concern I have is that this is sort of the Mount Everest of slippery slopes. If the rationale applies to legislators and cabinet members, wouldn't it also apply to all other elected officials in the state of Florida? We've had problems in Tallahassee in the not-so-distant past, controversies over questions and controversies over whether our city commissioners were living in the districts they represent. So this is a critical issue, and I understand the concerns that Senator Stargell has, but again, I think it's critical to the public's ability to keep an eye on their legislators and what they're doing and why they're doing it.
Barbara, you're also tracking other pieces of legislation that you think could pose a threat to open government in Florida. What are they? What else is on the radar?
Well, we currently have, I updated the bill list this morning, we have about 55 bills on our tracking list. Not all of those create exemptions, but I think there are at least a dozen new exemptions, or if not more, proposed to date. And remember, we're adding bills. I added 10 bills this morning to our tracking list as they're being reported on Online Sunshine. One of the ones that I have a true concern about is a proposed exemption that would protect all information about candidates for university and college presidents up to the point where a list of finalists is drafted. At that point, we would know who those finalists are, but we would have no information up to that point about who had applied, who had been rejected, who had been, you know, how they got on to that list of finalists. And too frequently, we get a finalist list of one. There's not a lot of information. And the rationale for that exemption is that the best and the brightest don't apply for positions of university and college presidents in Florida because of our sunshine laws.
Right. The rationale, Barbara, is that they don't want their current institutions
to know.
That they're looking for a competing offer.
Correct. Let me make it clear.
Wouldn't any job searcher think that's a relevant concern?
Well, I don't know about other jobs. I think high-level jobs like university presidents, if the rationale applies to university presidents, it applies to county administrators, it applies to city managers, it would apply to virtually every position in the state of Florida. But I know specifically in the area of education, a lot of times people in these positions, it's very common that they're constantly looking or being contacted by headhunters. It also presumes that the university presidents we have now and have had in the past were not the best and the brightest, that we could have done better than John Thrasher or Kent Fuchs. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Huh. Well, you know, in the first part of this show, Barbara, we had a very spirited discussion, hearing from both political parties about government accountability, the public's right to know. This is what you do. The First Amendment Foundation is solely dedicated on protecting the public's right to oversee state government and hold it accountable to the electorate. And I think most people would agree that strong sunshine laws are better than weaker ones. That said, are there sometimes unintended consequences of government in the sunshine? As Tom mentioned, sometimes people don't want information public, and they might not put their name forward for a new job or a new role because they just don't want to be subject to the strong sunshine laws that we have here.
Well, there's a difference first between releasing information, as in a press release, for example, and someone making a public records request. So if I'm an employee, for example, of the University of Maryland, I'm the current provost, and I want to apply for a job as university president at UCF, who's going to be making a public records request to get that information? How else is it going to be public unless either it is affirmatively and proactively released or someone makes a public records request? So that's one reason I just sort of don't buy that argument. As for truly sensitive and personal, deeply personal information, I think the legislature does a pretty good job of identifying that information which is truly sensitive and needs to be protected. Social Security numbers, for example, are exempt from public disclosure. Mm-hmm. Medical information is exempt from public disclosure. Confidential business information is exempt. So we do a pretty good job of protecting that information which really needs to be protected. But too frequently, the legislature bows to the interests of you know, special interest groups. We have 1,122 exemptions to our public records law and our open meetings law.
Barbara, let me remind folks that you are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Speaking with Barbara Peterson, the outgoing boss at the First Amendment Foundation, talking about Florida's sunshine laws. Mitchell in Tallahassee has a question. Go ahead, Mitchell. You are on the radio.
Sure. So if we're looking at, you know, public information on these legislators being present for people to see, what, I mean, I know you said to the extent of, you know, very intimate personal information won't be displayed, but it's hard to prevent that, and it could seem like it could escalate as we're like, you know, we need more information on these people because we need to find this out and that out. To what extent, I mean, do you think that it could eventually go, and how could we actually actively prevent it from going too far?
Barbara, how far?
Well, first, I think government should not be collecting information from individuals that government doesn't need to do its job. As an example, up until not so long ago, if you were getting married in the state of Florida, one of the questions on your license application was your race. Why do they need to know your race in order to give you a marriage license? So that's the first step. Government should not be collecting information government doesn't need. Now, the whole purpose of our open government laws is to allow us, the people, to oversee our government and hold our government accountable for its actions. And there is information about public officials that is critical to that right of oversight and accountability. So, I mean, again, I think the legislature has done a good job of identifying the information that truly needs to be protected. But frankly, I do not believe that a legislator's home address needs to be protected or should be protected. It's again, getting to that oversight mm-hmm. function.
Barbara, let me ask you, you've been in this space for a quarter of a century. The role of a free press and independent journalism is front and center for a lot of folks over the past several years. Do you get a sense, what is your sense of support of Floridians for the kinds of open records laws that the First Amendment Foundation advocates for?
I think this support's very strong. When I started at the foundation in 1995, we started a toll-free hotline for anybody with questions about open government in Florida. That first year, we received just over 200 calls for the year. We're now receiving about 150 calls a month, and the majority of those calls are coming from citizens who think that they've been wrongly denied access to a public
record.
They've been shut out of a...
And Barbara, we're coming up to the end of the hour, but I want to thank you for 25 years of service to the state of Florida. Barbara Peterson, retiring from the Florida First Amendment Foundation. Thanks for being with us, Barbara.
Thank you.
Well, that's our show. Thanks for listening. A spirited hour, Tom. We'll look forward to doing it again next week.
Indeed. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Thanks for listening, calling. Sorry we couldn't get to all those calls and tweets. Have a great weekend.